I'm Jason Habish. This is Clinton Foppel, my guest.
Yep.
And he's going to be hopefully a recurring and often guest. And Clinton, we're here to talk about this tremendous path you've walked.
Mm.
And I'd like to know a little more about you and your story. And I think we should start at the beginning, which is probably one of the most important things that we just discovered, which is you are going to be judging Ribfest.
That's correct, Jason. I don't think it's probably too small an issue or too big an issue or too middle-sized an issue to say I'm not qualified for this. I've had ribs, but you were very clear with me that I don't have all the qualifications. And I think what you said between the lines that I read into was you want to be my substitute, but you're not allowed to be. You're not going to get to do it.
There was some jealousy there.
And I found that. I told a few people. I really have no reason to be a judge except that a friend invited me, and now I'm pumped about it because everyone wants to do it, so that must mean it's really cool.
Right. So Ribfest is here in Fort Wayne. It's coming up. By the time you are probably listening to this, Ribfest will probably be over, but really I was throwing shade at Clinton because his body mass is healthy, and I don't think that qualifies him as a Ribfest judge, whereas if you looked at me, you'd be like, oh yeah, that guy's a professional Ribfest judge for
that's
sure.
Right. Well, hey, that's what makes a pro.
Right.
Right? There we are.
I don't know if he has the palate, but he definitely holds that chair down. So Clinton, tell us, what is Remedy Live, Soul Medic, and Get Schooled Tour?
Well,
what's your role?
There's a lot of things there. Let me back up to say that if I talk funny, and I definitely do walk funny, but you can't see that in the podcast, it's because I'm Canadian. Mm-hmm. I've raised in Western Canada and raised in a pretty difficult home life. I did have a mom that loved me, but she had some struggles, self-care issues, and I had a father that struggled as well. And so most of my childhood is traumatic and difficult. But that shaped me to have a bit of a resilience and a sensitivity to people that struggle. And throughout my time working with students, which goes all the way back to 1989, which is quite a few years, I have really gravitated towards the young person that feels that struggles too much, too big, and that no one cares. So Remedy Live was created 12 years ago as an online destination for people to come and visit and chat and watch videos and interact around those messy issues so that they know that they don't have the final say on the kid's future and that there's hope, but it starts with a confession, a conversation, and a willingness to actively listen. The Get School Tour is a program that we launched 3 years ago, as you can see in the name, probably with public schools. And this really is a 60-minute program that's interactive. We do a lot of polling and live interaction, and it orbits around educating students about mental health, lowering the stigma around that issue, and trying to move kids into the network of care so that if they are struggling, there's someone that can help them. And then I think your final question was about Soul Medics, and they are the heroes of both of those worlds. Soul Medics are just people like you and I that dedicate time to work for us here at Remedy, to be an active listener at the end of that chat center so that there's always someone available 24 hours a day that will offer hope, no strings attached, to whomever comes our way. So a mouthful there. If people are still listening, please. You might have ran to the kitchen to get something to eat, and you're back now, and you're like, you didn't miss anything. Now we're going to get into the fun stuff.
Well, this is a unique nonprofit. I mean, are you the only one doing this?
There are more now than there ever were, of course. We were pioneering in the greatest sense of the word in the beginning with, the iPhone came out the same week Remedy Live launched. So it kind of gives you an idea of the parallel of using these gadgets to create conversations. And
right.
But chat centers, you know, I think we go back to, you know, hotline phone call type mediums. I think we're similar to that, but we only use text and web chat to do what we do. And so in the beginning, there wasn't really anyone doing what we were doing because there was a time when texting wasn't even a thing. And if it was a thing, Dad was getting a $1,400 bill for it. So we were really on the edge of when it became something where you could get an all unlimited plan.
Right.
Kids were using the devices. They weren't necessarily the ones to have those devices in the beginning. So we really kind of evolved this thing. But now you've got a number of them. Your crisis text line is probably the largest in the country because we're faith-based, so we're looked down upon a little bit because we apparently have some agenda that is secretive and we want to get kids to drink the Kool-Aid and stuff.
Right.
But crisis text is a secular crisis center that does really good work. Hope Line's been around for a number of years. That's Dawson McAllister's kind of a radio support. And there are a few others out there that are there now that weren't, but it's still a pretty small space to occupy. There's not as many as I would like. I think that there's enough herd out there that we could have millions of remedy lives, and it would be still not enough. So, yeah, it's a pretty unique place to work and to be and to spend time in.
Well, let's kind of walk it back to coming out of Canada. You know, one of the things that you and I connected with right out of the gate was we've taken some L's in life.
Yeah.
And, you know, we walked through them. Mm-hmm. And I personally, we talked about this once, that I tend to trust people more when they've taken some L's. You know, they've taken some hits, and they come out of that knowing themselves more, stronger in their faith, you know, maybe a little wiser.
Yeah.
And still willing to invest in people. And those mm-hmm. are the people that I'm sort of drawn to. You know, I'm always fascinated by that, because not everybody does that.
Mm.
And so you came out of Canada, you arrived here in the beautiful Fort Wayne.
Well, actually, yeah. Indianapolis was my first U.S. destination.
Oh, it was the first one.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's where I met my wife.
Okay. Yeah. Let's tell us about that. You arrive in Indianapolis, and you're getting back on your feet.
Yeah. Well, I'll back up even further because it's relevant to what you just said. You know, I was, first of all, came out of addiction, had an encounter with Jesus that changed my life. And if people ever ask me, you know, are you religious? So, you know, I'm like, no, not really. I'm just a guy that knows where I've come from. And it was a really scary place where I was struggling a lot with confidence and purpose and hope. And Jesus gave me all those things because I really believe he's alive and active. And he's not just something that we talk about, but he's someone that's in my life every day. I needed him. I need him. And so I leaned heavy into that and got involved a lot in church work. Unfortunately, I have a bit of an addictive personality. That's what I had before Jesus. And I just exchanged addiction to drugs to addiction to work. Met a woman in the church I worked at, got married, and then continued to cheat on her by being at work all the time. Mm-hmm. She left me. She had her own baggage, of course. I was a fixer. I thought I could fix her, and I didn't mm-hmm. fix her by any means. In fact, made it worse, I'm sure. And we divorced, and I hit rock bottom because I did not believe that I had any more purpose in life, because for the 10 years that I had worked with people in the church, I thought I had a purpose to do, and I was really just stuck in a bunch of do. You know, I wasn't doing good at all.
What role does shame have at this point? What's rolling around your head?
Oh, yeah, at the end of the marriage, everything. You
Especially
know?
In ministry.
Yeah. Well, I was shamed inwardly. I was shamed outwardly by people, mm-hmm. you know, gossip, slander. Did you hear? Did you hear about Clinton? It was a large church, which wasn't by, you know, again, easy, because it was a high profile position. Very public. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you get the drill that it was a very hard thing. And the shame was kind of like, you know, if you've ever walked through high weeds, burrs can get attached to your socks and to your clothing, and shame is like that. It just connected to me, and it hurt, and it made me feel uncomfortable, and it was a constant reminder. I wasn't smart enough to stop and figure out ways to get these things off me and get this off me. But thank goodness there was a couple of people that loved me intentionally through that and gave to me what I needed, which was some tough love to learn that I'm a human being, not a human doing. And I know it sounds simple, and it's a neat bumper sticker, but I really needed to hear that. And I came out of that. It's a long, much longer story. You know, it's a 10-part series, I'm afraid. But right. I came out of that realizing I did have something to offer still. But I wanted to do it where I wasn't in control. So I moved from Canada in the suburban context to urban inner city Indianapolis, working with kids that I'd never met before, never experienced urban poverty and the things that I experienced there, and it really radically changed my life.
And you might have been a bit of a novelty to them.
Well, I was
from Western Canada.
I was past a cracker. That's what they would call me. And it was funny at first because I didn't know what that meant. I was like, excuse me?
What are you talking about?
Exactly. I enjoy chips and salsa. Are you referring to that? You know, that food? It was great. You know, I was the odd man out. I just told a story a couple of days ago. You know, I'm surrounded by, kids that are wonderful kids at their heart, but they've just not been given a chance to be loved. And some of them have manipulated their way to where they're at. Some of them, unfortunately, because of their family upbringing, have seen lots of homicide and drug addiction. You know, a couple guys were running crack for their mom, who was a hooker by night, and well, hooker really all the time. And, you know, some of them would steal to be able to buy jeans so they could fit in with kids at school. And it was just an education in what life can be like in different contexts. And I was introduced to racism, which really broke my heart, because I'd never really experienced it the way that I was seeing it as a newbie to the United States. And yeah, met a lot of really, really great kids. Learned that basketball, which I loved when I played college basketball in Canada, was a different form of religion in the United States. And it was a wonderful thing to do in Indiana, especially, to get connected with kids. I met a lot of kids that are playing in the NBA now, and that's kind of been a fun thing to watch them succeed and give back to their neighborhoods when they become wealthy and successful. But when I met my wife, Tanya, I truly met a rock star, because here she is also a white woman that is walking into the urban centers of these kids' lives and taking them from the inner city out of their zip code for the very first time to, you know, Red River Gorge, Kentucky, and Colorado mountains, and Yosemite in California, and taking them and showing them that a four-day backpacking trip with a 60-pound backpack and 20-mile trip can show you that you can do it and you can succeed. And we're very proud of the fact that now we can say some of those kids were the first to graduate from high school and go to college in their family. Some of them were the first to graduate from college and get a degree and, you know, change and break the line of poverty in their families. And it was all because my wife, who's my just an amazing role model for so many, showed a lot of these kids you can do it.
Was she just like driving around with a van saying, "Hey, let's go backpacking"? Or
well,
some organization,
you know, you've ever seen a white van pull up to a group of kids? You know, yeah, it's kind of like,
you guys
actually
want a granola bar.
It's ironic because she drove a white van, but she would pull up to a Boys and Girls Club or a community community center and start developing a relationship, and then they'd raise the money. And they would take these kids. And again, just think about it, Jason. Never leaving your zip code your entire life. And now you're on top of a mountain. Right. Now you're in a forest where there's no sirens, there's no gunshots. That's scary. And to the point of what you're trying to make earlier, struggle and getting a few L's helps us learn who we really are. Mm-hmm. And if we lean into that, characters develop, then we become stronger. It's kind of part of the way that the Lord designed us. So yeah, it's been a fun journey, and here I am now in Fort Wayne, where Tanya grew up. And when we married, Mom and Dad said, "It's time to move back. We want grandkids." So
they
moved back
here.
They do. Yeah. They do that. They're selfish, those grandparents. but we're excited. I'm excited to be here. This is the biggest small town I've ever lived in. Mm-hmm. Everyone seems to know each other. Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm a small town guy. I grew up in a town of 3,000 people, so I really do think, as I get older, I love these kinds of communities, and I'm excited to raise my family here.
If you're a small-town girl, you might be in a Journey song.
That's right. Or Nickelback, which is also from my hometown.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So let's talk about one of those events that gives you the vision for Remedy. Mm-hmm. And you've told me that story before, mm-hmm. and it's a unique story.
Mm-hmm.
And let's walk into that.
Well, you know, when you think about providing an online place or destination, you've obviously got to know that there's a sovereign God that actually is way more powerful than Google, you know, and connects kids with what they need at the time that they need it. Now, I'm not saying that every kid gets help from us, but we agreed that we needed to provide a destination. But we started off as an internet radio project, which is funny because I'm talking into the same microphones we used to use in the studios.
So future thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
Internet and radio
is
together.
Right, oh, I tell you. And just a piece of information that you don't know probably is that my father-in-law used to own a Hot 107.9. So
what?
Radio is part of the fam, but not internet radio. What's that? I actually thought when someone first asked me about internet radio from the project we were starting, I'm like, you mean like a guy with a Barry Manilow collection in his basement? Like, what's internet radio?
Right.
You know, I didn't know any of what that meant. But we started a legitimate, like, two studio radio station that broadcast at Remedy.fm back in those days. And I was on the air doing my goofball show, the All Request Show, 3 to 5 or 3 to 6, I guess.
How do people make requests?
They would use AOL Instant Messenger.
What? They got on AIM?
Yeah, they would get on AIM. They would Facebook chat had just launched. MySpace had just died. That kind of gives you some context. But a kid came on AOL one day and said during my show that he was dying. His name was Ben. Mm-hmm. And his screen name was Kane something. I can't remember his full name. And Ben ended up working for us years later. That's why I can tell you all this. But he was struggling, and he had he'd taken some pills. And we didn't know what to do because AOL wasn't taking calls that day. We freaked out. I called 911, and luckily my assistant was smart enough to look in the database of screen names and wins and who'd got a Skillet CD 2 weeks early, you know, things like that. And she'd found this guy's screen name and found his mailing address. And we told the mailing address to the dispatcher. And later that evening, I got a call from Fort Wayne police that they'd found a 16-year-old male dying on his living room floor. It was legitimate. And 4 days later, Ben and his mom came down to Remedy, and she wept in my office, and everything changed. We didn't give up on radio, but we sure didn't care about the top 10 anymore. We cared about chat conversations and faceless abilities to be able to give people courage discreetly to talk about things that maybe they'd never share with another human being. And so it began with the DJs in the beginning. And then now, of course, we've got 40 paid soul medics that work for us. So
that's tremendous. And so I mean, you really shifted from influencing through entertainment to being really intentionally direct conversations.
Oh, there's an irony there, right? Like we all want to be entertained. Mm-hmm. But deep down, I think we want to be more than entertained. We want to be meaningful. We want to be significant. We want to be known. And these kids are screaming for that. They want to be known. You know, if you've ever seen a student dress a certain way or perform a certain way or express a certain way, it's because they want to be noticed. And we've just committed here at Remedy that we're going to be actively listening to people that come our way, no matter who they are. You know, if they're gay, they're trans, they're straight, they're white, they're black, they're Asian, they're Canadian, whatever, it doesn't matter to us, we're going to talk to them.
Even Canadian.
Even those people in Canada. There's always a bacon smell in the chat when the Canadians come in, but we're excited about that too. And, you know, one chat per hour is generally suicidal in nature at Remedy Live today. Like today while we're sitting here, there's someone in our chat center sharing a suicide plan.
So tell us about Soul Medics in that role.
Well, they're an amazing group of people. They're our Justice League. You know, these are people that have incredible compassion. Empathy burnout is high. I'm not going to deny that we have a lot of people that have to take time off because of some of the tough slugging that they hear in the chat. But the power of listening. I think that's why you and I are friends, is because we've spent time at coffee shops listening to each other. You know, We don't like to be with someone that doesn't hear us. Mm-hmm. And we don't like to be talked to. We want to be listened to. And so these are great people. They listen really well. They ask really good questions. We believe that how are you has to really mean something. Mm-hmm. And in our culture, of course, how are you is fine, good, when it's not always true. And so today at Remedy Live, we're asking how are you and meaning it and asking how we can continue to unpack that for 45 minutes to an hour, sometimes 90 minutes worth of conversation, because we believe in it. These are normal everyday people, but they're screened, they're trained, they're empowered to work on our behalf from their homes. And we could not do what we do without them, because they're a very, very cool group of people. And yet at the same time, they're so normal that some of them have what we call redemptive baggage, just like you and I. Some L's, like you said earlier.
Redemptive baggage, dig into that.
Well, when you go through stuff in your life, and shame, like we talked about earlier, you begin to believe the lies that failure is, you know, not going to allow me to live my life the way I want. I'm a failure. I'm a screw up. I'm addicted. I'm a mess. I'm whatever. And we believe that that baggage, yes, it's real. It happened. We're not going to deny it and avoid it and make it sound like it's not something that really happened. But we're going to believe in the God that redeems things and takes what was meant to be harmful and cruel and broken and ugly and nasty. And we're going to talk about it so that there's a power that comes into that heals and builds up and makes people feel like they can also be transparent about those things. And we call it redemptive baggage because we believe that baggage can be redeemed if and truly we become humble enough to admit that we've struggled. And, James chapter 5 talks about how the confession of one person to another is a powerful thing. Mm-hmm. And that's where God gets involved and miracles occur. So that's what we believe it to be. And redemptive baggage is different in every one of our lives. You know, I've already shared a little bit about my divorce and my workaholism and how that allows me to be a better marriage mentor now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people listening might say, oh, he was divorced? Mm-hmm. What does he know about marriage? Trust me, fail a few times, you start to know a lot of things, especially about your own shortcomings. And I think that's what humanity should be about, is helping each other know, wait a minute, I made that mistake. You don't need to. You know, let's work together.
Yeah, in a different context, but the same idea. I'm on this health journey, getting advice and all these things because I'm a large person. And oddly enough, that helped me in college because part of my job was going out on Saturdays and moving people around. They didn't want to be moved so that my quarterback and my running backs could do things.
Okay.
But what they don't tell you when you're, when you're that person in college, that over the years, you can't continue to gain weight and keep being a big person, right? Mm. So, but to your point, I tend to trust somebody that was once big that became healthy rather than somebody that's always been healthy.
Isn't that the case, right?
Dishing out advice.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
But that redemptive, and actually back to that comment about confessing, sometimes people think confessing is like, it puts you in this situation of like, now you've confessed and here comes your punishment and you want to avoid it. But the truth is that narrative, those things that are rolling around in your head that you're saying to yourself, the shame talk and the you're not good enough talk and all that thing. When you say it out loud to somebody you trust and you love, it's the weirdest thing. It's like all of a sudden doesn't have the power over you.
Yeah.
It can almost sound laughably ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, well, of course I am, and so getting especially young people to have those conversations with a soul medic, I could see just be tremendous to have somebody that's trained and wants to help them. So let's say somebody is suicidal. What does a soul medic do for them?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, and I say it this way, because we never would want anyone to be suicidal, but there's different tiers to that, right? There's people that are struggling with depression, maybe seasonally, or depression at a level that is causing them to believe that their life is hopeless, and so they're considering, what does it look like for me not to be around anymore? But then there's people that they've got a far more significant plan in play. They know how they want to take their life. They have a date on the calendar, even perhaps.
Right.
So everyone's got a different, story, and that's again where the value of actively listening comes in, because not everybody that struggles with suicide is actually going to take their life. In fact, statistics show that most people that struggle with suicide actually don't take their life. They just continue to struggle, and they struggle in silence, and so they lose. They're a walking dead person, basically. Mm-hmm. They lose their life. Not physically, but emotionally and spiritually and
mentally.
They've
lost the vision for their life. They're just going through the motions.
So we believe a crazy thing. We believe, first of all, confession's God's idea, but not for him. Mm-hmm. It's for us. When you confess, your own words begin to heal your heart. Mm-hmm. When you type a confession into a text message to Remedy Live, we believe that your eyes are seeing your own words, and that for maybe the first time, you're coming to terms with your own understanding of how big the struggle is. And we believe that there's a conviction that occurs where you start to come to terms and have the courage to say, this is real. Now, I know that sounds foolishness, but we just learned that when people get so clouded with mental illness or anything, you talk about addictions, you talk about anything like that, we become so familiar with those things that we don't actually listen to ourselves anymore. We just go with the flow of whatever dysfunction we've allowed into our life. Mm-hmm. So these soul medics are meant to ask questions so that the client can be honest about where they're at, but also see their own answers in such a way that there's therapy. You know, it's a joke, right? I don't know if you've ever been to a therapist. I've been to many. Mm-hmm. You come in, they ask you one question, You speak for like a whole hour and then they charge you $90.
Right.
So we just figured out we'll do this for free. We'll ask you one question. You'll talk for 45 minutes to 90 minutes and you'll feel a lot better for it because you did that. Now you say, well, it's a text message. How can it be better? I don't understand it either. You know, if I'm going to help people in France, I got to learn French. So right. If you want to help this generation, you got to use text speak. It's not ideal. We sure would wish that they would come in face to face and talk to somebody, but we're going to take what we can get. But we do believe that the power of that confession gets people to a place where now we can get the next steps in play. Yes, we call 911 a lot because people are a danger to themselves, and sometimes they want us to do it on their behalf because they don't have the courage to do that, but they know they need that. Sometimes they don't want us to do it. And I'm sharing a trade secret here on the podcast, but we do have a lot of people that are angry at us. You know, I thought this was confidential. I thought this was anonymous. Well, it's not really anonymous. You're using your cell phone. So there's a mobile number, and we never use that information unless we know that you're a danger to your very future. Then we would have to get involved with the police and get them saved. And generally, you know, 4 months, 5 months after they have that encounter and they're healthier, then they're thankful. Because they weren't thinking straight. They were unhealthy. They were mentally ill. So there's all kinds of tears. But a lot of the conversations around here, Jason, and I'm not saying the majority, but a lot of them are not people that will take their life. It's just people that they just don't believe they have a life worth living. And we want them to know everyone's got different DNA for a reason. It's because God created you just perfect, just the way you are. And you've got baggage and make mistakes, but it's because you're a human doing right now. Let's talk about you being a human being. Mm-hmm. You know, let's let the mistakes be something that helps us understand how much we need a Savior, how much we need a hope, how much we need to rely on each other because we're not perfect. Only God's perfect. So let's help each other with that. And it seems to go pretty well.
So let's talk about Get School Tour. Tell us about that pivot and how it started and what your vision was.
It started with a local hospital group here in Fort Wayne that asked if we would join a research project. They'd applied for some funding, and they needed a partner that was doing telemental health, which we didn't know we were doing. It's like those big words. Like, what? We're doing what?
That's right, is that a station?
Exactly. Yeah, that's something you'd say when you're 14, right? You're so telemental. But anyway, yeah, we decided that we were doing that, and we started doing some schools together because they wanted someone to use technology like we were doing, but we adapted our technology to go from chatting to polling. And it worked pretty well, and we allowed that to be a way that we gathered a bunch of data for this purpose of research that we were doing with this hospital group. And, you know, we did it, and then school started saying, hey, would you do that at our school? We don't want the research stuff. We just want you to talk about mental health. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now we're 3 years later, 160 events later. You know, we've been to every school, I think, in the Fort Wayne area. Maybe there's a couple that haven't had us, and I won't name them because that would be bad. But we've been everywhere. We've had 96,000 kids interact with our polling, and we've learned a lot about the struggles they've gone through. And the Get School Tour does something really unique in that it, you know, provides the entertainment stuff, like the music and the stuff that gets kids excited about being in the room for an hour. But then what we use is the devices they have in their hands to connect to our Wi-Fi center that we bring into the school so that it's completely disconnected from the World Wide Web. And then we just allow their browser without any identifiable information to be available for them to be able to confess, to click different things about anxiety, about depression, about struggle. We call it secret struggle. And when the data is up on the screen, and 38% of the room struggles with anxiety, or 28% struggles with depression, or we see that 61%, which is the actual number of 98,000 kids, 61% know someone who has a suicide struggle in Indiana, then now we can work with that. We can say, here's the evidence. Wow, we need to do something about this. We need a remedy. You know, let's get this thing not only next steps, but we've got a great team. And we have a lovely relationship with Bone Center here in the city where we have therapists in a room in your school that will talk to you in the next few seconds. And we're very proud of the fact that in the year 2018-2019 school year, 5.1% of 30,000 kids showed up to talk to a therapist at the end of the Get School Tour.
That's tremendous.
So,
and so this is an event like just like any school assembly, same length of time, but it's got music, band, mm-hmm. you know, great message.
Interactive stuff.
And And all these kids pull out their phones and they just start telling you all the things that, that they're going through the survey.
Absolutely. You know, we ask a question at the very end, you know, what's your secret struggle? And wow, you know, we, again, that's another 10 part podcast series because it's,
right.
But no one's ever asked them a question.
Right. In my day job, I teach, and I had a student, young lady that every day, you know, she's, I don't even think she's 5 feet tall, high schooler, attitude bigger than her, you know, just likes to, you know, would cuss at me every day and, or not at me, but just in the class, you know, trying to make a point that she's there and, you know, she just wanted to be heard and, you know, and all those kind of things. But every day it was, how you doing today? What's going on? You know, language at the table, please. And, you know, she just gave me grief all the time. And I got a postcard from her at the end of the day or at the end of the year saying, you know, thanks for not giving up on me. Thanks for asking me how I was doing every day. Thanks for saying hi to me every day. Nobody was doing that.
Isn't that crazy?
And it's, you never know the impact you have, especially when you work with people or young people. You just don't know
until you don't.
Years later. Do you have any stories of maybe young people coming up or educators or anybody like that coming up and just telling you a story about what the event was for them and the impact it had?
Yeah, happened yesterday. Speaking at a sports camp this week in the mornings, and I've been working with a guy that's doing some music at this thing, and we're in the bathroom getting ready. We joked it was our green room. You know, I had to put my mic on, and he had to make his hair look good. He's kind of ripped, so he had to make sure he looked good in his t-shirt. And we're getting ready, and I knew him. I've worked with him a couple years. But I didn't know that 10 years ago, I spoke at an event that changed his life.
Really?
Yeah. I never knew that. And he told me just kind of flippantly as we were getting ready, you know, do you remember that? And I'm like, I think so.
Maybe.
Yeah. One of the musicians we work with on the Get School Tour, I didn't know this either. We were doing an event here in Fort Wayne, and I'd hired him literally from a friend. I didn't know who he was, but I hired him through a friend. He showed up to DJ my gig, and he says, you know, I met you. We used to do a thing called Club Remedy at the church I worked at. Mm-hmm. He says, I came out to one of your Club Remedy events, and it changed my life. So to your point, if we human beings, if you and I and everyone listening just chooses to live a life of radiant love and compassion for those around us. Not weird stuff. Like, I don't say hug everyone.
Right.
But just be thoughtful and considerate. Be servant-minded in the way that you help others. But maybe look at people like they're eternal beings rather than just, you know, something that you can use today for some purpose. Maybe the world could be a better place, first of all, but maybe life could be better fulfilling for me. Because every time I hear those things, no doubt you, when you got that from that girl, felt like, I'll teach the rest of my life. You know, this is the best thing ever. You know, absolutely. No paycheck can make this feeling. So I just, it's been amazing. Now, we've had a lot of people over the years, especially with the Get School Tour, share suicide plans at the end of the events. Mm-hmm. One girl shared about a knife that she had under her bed that she wanted to use because she wanted to take her life because she missed her father who had passed away 2 years earlier. I'll never forget that because obviously I was the first person she ever told that to, and we were able to get her safe, and now she's doing great. But you just know it's the small things we do in our humanity that helps people in the largest parts of their world, you know, make a difference. And we've got to be more willing to pay attention to that. It's what we do. It's what our actions do as change makers. And I have a phrase that I stole from Bill Hybels, change people, change people. Mm-hmm. So we just got to make sure we're paying it forward that way.
Changed people, change people.
Yeah. It's back to the redemptive baggage, right?
I'm so mad I didn't think that up. So mad.
Because what would the URL be like? Oh, changed people. Is it too long? Would people type it in?
CPCP.
It's right. Yeah. There is a book, I think, called Change People, Change People, too. Yeah. I think so. It's not mine. It's Bill Hybels. Or maybe he stole it from somebody. I don't know.
Clinton, I'm so glad you shared with us. How can people help, and how can people find your information?
Well, if you'll just touch the speaker right now for healing and pull out your credit card. Someone knew I was going to say that because they're like, this guy's a great Christian. He's going to ask for money.
He's going to ask for money.
Well, obviously, I would never turn down a donation. We run a nonprofit where 14-year-olds don't donate in the chat center. But I think the bigger thing that people could do is there's a variety of ways. If you're a businessman, have us come out and do a wired event at your business where we'll come in for 30 minutes and have some fun interactive trivia polling. We'll have some fun talking about mental health and how it affects the workplace. And then maybe some of your employees will get the help that they deserve to be able to come out of their secrets. If you're a parent, consider hosting a Trends in Teens parenting workshop at your home. I'll bring the cheesecake. We'll talk about how screens are affecting the forming adolescent brains and causing different issues that we can all make a difference changing if we just get the information that we need. If you're somebody who wants to use technology to change people's lives and you're within the Fort Wayne area about an hour away or so, then you want to join our team. We're always looking for soul medics that we can pay to be missionaries on our behalf.
Do you have to be in Fort Wayne to do that?
You have to be within an hour. We're doing more intentional face-to-face training now. We used to just do video training, but now we're doing both.
Right.
So, but you know, within an hour would be fine. Even Indianapolis probably is still within range, as long as you can drive here. So that's one way that you can get involved there as well. And if you're a person of faith and you believe in prayer that it works like we do, then you can just pray. We actually have a prayer team of 1,800 people. And if you want to join that prayer team, I can connect you with our prayer captain, and he'd be more than happy to send you multiple text messages a day about things we need prayer for.
Does it cost money to pray?
There's no money charge for the prayer, although I got to try to figure out a scheme there.
Right.
If you click this button, as you pray, $5 is donated to Remedy Live.
And you won't believe what happened. Click here.
But, you know, all jokes aside, it's easier to get $20 in 20 minutes. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Prayer is a lot harder than donations. And so if you're sitting down thinking, well, do I want to give him $20 or do I want to give him 20 minutes in prayer? We'll take the minutes in prayer first because that changes the world.
And as you come back, I would love to talk about leadership in a nonprofit and those kind of things. I know that you obviously have concerns about, like any nonprofit leader, we want to make sure our revenue's coming in, that we can pay for this, we can keep helping people, things like that. But underlying all that, though, you don't have concerns about that, do you?
No, I used to think about it all the time. Mm-hmm. And it did keep me up at night. And there once in a while, you know, again, I'm human, I still get this kind of panic attack.
Sure.
I need to fix this. But no, I have really settled into a faith and a confidence that this is going to work out, not only because of people that have been faithful to support us, but creative ideas on how we can kind of earn our keep. You know, they get school tours, something that actually generates us income because it's a program. It's a really great program, and it generates some income. And there's some other things that we do around here that generates income as well. So we're just getting creative. We're not trying to be, you know, we don't want to be a guy with a sign at the Walmart saying, please give me money.
Right.
You know, and not that those people don't need some money, but they also need our time more than our money. But I want to be someone that works for my wages, and I'm not as nervous about that as I used to be.
Yeah. And you're confident that if you're walking the path, that the manna appears.
It really, yeah, yes. I truly, and again, as I get older, that formula has been proven very successful. Mm-hmm. You know, just last night, to talk about my bride even more, when we approach schools, we know it is nearly impossible on paper for a school to invite a Jesus-centered, Bible-believing, faith-based 501c3 non-for-profit into the school to talk to the entire student body and pull them on private data and talk to them about something like suicide. Like, just do the math.
Yeah.
Not going to happen. Not going to
totally
happen.
Bananas.
So when 160 events happen in 3 years, last night a corporation that you know well contacted us and says, we want you to do all our schools.
Tremendous.
And my wife starts weeping because we still believe that God does that.
Shows up.
He does it. We're just faithful to say, you know, Lord, we just want to be a part of this. In fact, I often call it a T-ball moment. T-ball is a pretty easy game. All you got to do is swing.
Right.
People don't like to swing, though. They're afraid. What if I miss? No, everything's set up for you. If you trust in God, you know, he will take your life. And it won't maybe work out the two Escalades, boat, you know, lake, house, $1 million bank account, he's going to give you a better life than that. And I'm living proof of it, and so are you. You know,
absolutely.
So it's, yeah, I think trusting in God is a very important part of this whole thing at Remedy Life.
Well, I can't wait till we talk again.
We will talk again. It'll involve coffee or donuts or something.
Man, wouldn't that be awesome to be able to just take this on the road?
That's right. Well, I do have a small house on wheels that we could do that. I'll just pull out some of the seats and we can have a mobile studio.
Turn in one of those like van life YouTube videos.
That's right.
My daughters follow. Like, why can't I live in a van on a beach in Hawaii?
Okay. Yeah. You had to go and do that. You had to go and do that. Now my mind's like, how can we make that happen? But get school tour beach version.
Right. Our other office is in Honolulu.
Exactly.
Sorry.
That's right.
We're going.
Yeah. It was about the taxes.
Right. More vitamin D than you've ever had ever in Western Canada.
Sounds healthy.
Yeah. So much sun. All right. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Love you.
Love you too.